spring 1300 BC. On the fourth day of the march, the army came to a standstill by the edge of the Green River, all eyes on the pair of sorry-looking timber posts and dangling lengths of rope on the opposite banks. The bridge was but a memory.
Oh, this is a cruel joke. I can almost spit into Galasma from here, Grunter growled,
kicking a foot into the shingle by the river's shallows. The track resumed on the river's far banks and wound north like the waterway through a range of golden hills. The peaks of the soaring mountains stood proudly in the distance, but the low country of Galasma between the hills and the mountain range was obscured.
But the waters are shallow,
he said, eyeing the shiny, wet and smooth rocks that poked from the river's surface.
Thigh deep, I'd say.
General Nuanza cast his eye over the breadth of the waterway, then back along the halted army column and the sea of soldiers squinting into the sun to see what was happening ahead.
It'll take us the rest of the morning at least to move the divisions across. The wagons and mules will be the slowest part. This was always a contest of swiftness. Can we spare a morning?
Grunter asked. Nuanza bit his lip, the gesture answer enough.
The sky darkens, a soldier muttered nearby.
Grunter shot him a look, then followed his gaze. Above the obscured flatlands of Galasma, a single stark wisp of black smoke spiraled and twisted across the sky.
Are the lead mines already under assault?
Nuanza said, stepping closer to him so the men wouldn't hear. But already the murmur was spreading back along the column.
Galasma burns, they whispered.
Karunta shrugged.
A Galasman has left his bread in the oven too long while he sees to his wife, he grunted, feigning good humour.
Still, we had best be on our way across the ford, Volker said, appearing between Karunta and Nuanza.
Nuanza railed at the man's intrusion.
Aye? Well, maybe, if that is what the Tukanti decides.
The trio strode back to the royal carriage, where Prince Muwa stood.
We need direction, Tukanti, Kurunta replied. You are the king's voice. The bridge is down. The river will hamper our progress, but...
He lowered his voice, flicking his head towards the black pall in the north.
We cannot afford to tarry here.
Send me on ahead,
old Ruba said, ambling towards the carriage with Onyx the pony in tow. His bald head was burnt from the sun, and his gait shambling, but he was insistent.
I know the Galasmans well. I taught the sons of their nobles. I taught Darizu. Well, I tried anyway. And if there are Kaskans up ahead, they will ignore me. What threat would they see in an old man and his pony?
A fair plan, Kurunta thought. But Prince Muwa seemed deeply agitated. The young man had been on a number of campaigns already, and Kurunta had never seen him like this.
I can advise you on what I'd do if you wish, Tukanti.
Take a detachment ahead, while the rest of the column crosses the ford, Muwa replied swiftly and tersely, flicking a finger at Kurunta and Nuanza. Nuanza, you will lead.
Well, he must be bored of following me,
Kurunta muttered with a salty half-grin to his fellow general.
And true, being downwind of you is not a pleasant affair,
the bowman shot back with an arch look.
Tukanti, Volker interjected. Is it wise to stumble into the lands ahead in pieces? And keep the army as one. Cross the river and march into Galasma in unison.
The army will not advance in pieces, Muwa sighed. The detachment will be small,
insignificant even. Volker made to persist, but Muwa raised a hand. I have made my choice, Muwa said.
Old tutor, you will go too with a pair of scout riders, he said to Ruba.
Then he looked at Kurunta and Nuanza and flicked his head down the line of the halted column.
Summon two companies, one from each of your divisions.
Pitiless ravens,
Nuanza beckoned to a company of 100 from the blaze. Kurunta looked down the line to the storm division. He saw the many companies of veterans and the one with his most recent recruits. They would have to be stretched at some point, he thought, and perhaps this sortie would give them a first taste of true danger.
If enemy soldiers lie beyond, we are not to engage, are we, Tukanti?
Muwa shook his head.
You are scouts no more. See what lies ahead, then return to us. If something happens, if danger looms or you fall into trouble and cannot bring word back, send a single fire arrow into the sky to warn us. Kurunta nodded, then bawled,
Mountain wolves! With me!
The 200 splashed across the ford and moved at a gentle run on up the northern track, hugging the Green River's eastern banks. They moved with a rapid crunch-crunch of boots, rasping breaths, clinking bronze axes, swords and maces swinging in their belts. It was reminiscent of the Red Fell training, moving at a pace that had Hattu's lungs burning as if there were hot stones sitting in each.
Your falcon! If only she could talk!
Tanku panted, running by Hattu's side, his eyes glancing skywards where arrows soared.
She will see what lies ahead before the old scribe and the horsemen do.
The smoke is waning,
Dagon whispered. Indeed, that menacing single wisp of black had vanished.
But that doesn't mean the trouble has faded with it,
Kisner added. Hattu saw the flinty look in the pair's eyes. The Kaskan raid on Hattusa had robbed both of much. Dagon his home, his father crippled, Kisner his entire family. The folds of the river valley seemed never-ending, until at last they saw a broad V of azure sky ahead. They slowed at Kurunta and Nuanza's command, moving half-crouched, breaths held captive.
Whatever is beyond, Hattu said. Remember who we are.
Aye, we trained together. We bested every challenge of the academy,
Tanku agreed.
The wolves,
Dagon said in a strong whisper.
The wolves,
the rest agreed in throaty rasps. The scarred veterans of the pitiless ravens seemed compelled by this to make a whispered oath amongst themselves. They spilled from the end of the river valley to see not a waiting enemy, but a sun-soaked and broad stretch of alluvial flatland, a patchwork of gold crop, green meadow and brown fallow, dotted with farmsteads. The Green River separated into myriad brooks that meandered across this plain.
Galasma,
the captain of the ravens muttered in a muted tone.
Land of the loyal watchmen, Nuanza said.
A pleasant enough country, Hattu reckoned, were it not for the proximity of the snow-capped soaring mountains, now a clear and crisp jagged wall, impossibly high, lining the north edge of Galasma like an army of watching giants. This was the northern edge of Hittite lands, hard and ever so real. Now he understood the Galasman's lot. Gifted fine farmlands by the Grey Throne, in return for helping man the northern watchtowers, accepting their lot as a buffer state, and enduring the lofty realm of the Kaskans hovering on their shoulder. On the foothills before the soaring mountains, Hattu saw the many dark pockmark-like holes of the famed lead mines of this region. On top of these low hills, he spotted two stone and red clay watchtowers, broad square turrets, three stories high, but smothered in the morning shadows of the mountains. Against the backdrop of the imposing peaks and the Kaskan threat that lay within, these frontier towers looked like children gazing up at an oncoming tidal wave of stone. Kurunta said nothing, his good eye fixed on the mountains. Then at last his gaze dropped to the Galasman flatlands immediately ahead, and he said to Ruba,
Lead the way, old goose. We have your back.
Ruba led them down a gentle grassy slope into the Galasman flatlands, rich with the scent of wood smoke, barley and ox dung, and the gentle sounds of nature.
All seems well, Hattu mused.
When they approached a cluster of mud-brick huts lining one brook, he saw the workers in the fields, and as they drew closer, Hattu saw many don nervous looks, gulping, some turning their backs.
They fear us, Hattu muttered. Why? We are allies.
The mighty Galasmans,
Tanku said mockingly. The hardy fighters that will join us and tilt the balance against Pitaga.
Hold on. Where are all the men?
Garin said. Hattu looked around. Women, children, and old men. Not a man of fighting age to be seen. Only a few men of any age remained in open view. The nearest a short-haired old fellow, resting his weight on a crook, who watched their approach with bagged, tired eyes. The army halted when General Nuanza threw up a hand. The master archer then whispered to Ruba by his side.
Old goose, what is this?
Ruba shrugged, smiled an unconvincing smile, then heeled Onyx into a trot over to the man with the crook.
Greetings, comrade, Ruba said.
Welcome,
the lame man muttered in reply.
It has been some time since the King of the Grey Throne visited these parts.
Tanku and Dagon exchanged a look.
A warm welcome, eh?
Garin said. Something irked Hattu about the man's words, but he couldn't work out what. Ruba maintained his bright manner.
Your people are well, I trust.
Aye,
the old fellow sighed.
We saw smoke. Black smoke coming from these parts. We feared the worst.
The lame fellow's eyes widened, unblinking.
We had an infestation of locusts on one of our barley fields,
he said.
A blight of black spots. We had to put it to the torch.
Hattu saw beyond the small village a patchwork of fallow fields. One was darker than the others, and might have been burnt, but he couldn't tell from this distance.
Where is Darizu, chief of the watch in these parts?
Ruba asked. The old fellow shook his head.
All the menfolk have upped and left.
A confused chatter broke out around Hattu from all the soldiers who heard this. Nuanza switched his head in every direction.
To where?
To the line of the Northern Watch,
he said, lifting his crook and pointing it towards the shadowy foot of the soaring mountains and the two towers visible from here, then dragging it along to the west a little, where woods and hills obscured the view. Hattu saw just north of that area a narrow breach in the mountains, like an axe wound.
Where exactly?
Karunta pressed, growing impatient.
To the high fortress at Baka,
the old man said after a pause.
Overlooking the throat of the Carrion Gorge. They left in a great hurry, you see, after an outlying goat herd came in from the soaring mountains and told of a Kaskan approach from the north. Darizu hopes to bed in at Baka and block any southwards incursions.
Then it is true. Pitaga comes to take our lead mines, Nuanza asked.
The lame fellow shrugged.
We can only assume so. The only other thing he will get by coming this way is a damned hard fight.
He swung a fist as he said this, and some of the ravens and a few of the wolves laughed. Hattu had never felt less humoured.
Is there not a single man of the weapon who can take us there?
Karunta asked, his good eyes shooting across the houses and seeing just frightened children and women peering from the windows and roofs.
Not one,
the old fellow answered. Ruba, Karunta, and Nuanza gathered to convene. Hattu strained to listen in.
This is not what I expected, Ruba said. I knew Darizu's father when he was chief of the Galasman Watch. He would never neglect to leave a small garrison of sorts to watch over this unwalled settlement.
But if a heavy Kaskan force is coming down the gorge, perhaps every man was needed,
Nuanza countered, as he looked to the north and that narrow break in the peaks. Karunta growled like a cornered dog, and then spat into the dirt.
I fear that picking over these bones for too long would be a mistake. We should hurry for Baka Fortress. Find out what's going on there in good time before the Labana and the rest of the divisions reach these parts.
Noon came and went with few words spoken, before the 200 reached the northern end of the Galasman Flats. The midday sun chased the last of the shadows from the land, and the mountains shimmered like silver. The cicadas screamed now as they moved along the age-old track that took them into the foothills, and along a rising path walled with pine woods. It was cool here, at least, part shaded from the sun by trees. As they marched, Hattu saw the shadow of a bird pass over him. He looked up, and there was Arrow soaring overhead. She shrieked once, twice, and again.
What's wrong, girl? He mouthed.
She was a noisy bird at the best of times, but the way she beat her wings and tacked through the air in swift turns suggested this was no mere strop in search of food. Suddenly, the shade within the trees seemed to threaten. But nothing happened. As they approached the top of the path and emerged from the woods, Hattu could almost feel 200 or so breaths being released as the landscape beyond rose into view. The soaring mountains towered over them, broken only by the wide Carrion Gorge, which stretched off northwards, the silvery air within dancing in a heat haze, and not a sign of danger as far as the eye could see.
The gateway to the Lost North, he mused,
peering into the mirage of the gorge.
And its guardian,
Dagon added, nudging Hattu and looking up to his right. Hattu and the rest turned to see it, atop a steep, dusty golden hill, speckled with knots of goat thorn on the western side, stood Bakka Fortress. The stronghold was founded on silvery stone blocks and topped with parapets of red clay.
Only one approach,
Dagon mused, pointing up the western slope, almost blinding, such was the reflected glare of the sun. Indeed, Hattu thought, seeing that instead of a matching slope on the eastern side of the hill, it looked like there was only sheer golden rock face. It was as if a giant had bitten away that far half of the hill, perhaps a scar of the earliest lead miners. The back wall of Bakka Fortress was perched right on this precipice. They came to the foot of the western approach. Nobody spoke as they halted at the base of the hill, yet every mind asked the same question as they looked up to the high fortress and the parapet in particular. Not a man was to be seen.
Well, the Galasman garrison here also appears to be shy,
Garin remarked wryly, then looked over his shoulder nervously, eyeing the shady pine woods behind them, then the soaring mountains and the deserted gorge just a stone's throw to the north. Hattu eyed the broad dirt path leading up to the fort's main gate. That was the obvious approach, but he knew it could not be trusted until they sighted one of their own up there. He saw arrows circling up above the fort.
What can you see?
Darizu of the Watch!
Kurunta called up the hill. The call died as a lonely echo. Silence.
Galasman soldiers!
He tried again. Nothing. Hattu eyed each rounded merlon on the battlements, the absence of life up there feeling more wrong with every passing breath. Then at last, movement. A single head rose above the parapet. Darizu. His head of thick, curly hair hung to his brow, casting his pig eyes in shade.
Brothers!
He called down, punching a fist in the air.
A garrison of one man, Hattu heard Nuanza say. Half a man, I'd say,
Kurunta replied saltily, then filled his lungs to bellow again.
I've been told that the Galasman watch are here, yet they're either very shy or afraid of the sun. Where are they?
Indeed, 1,800 men were mustered from the farms and came here. But it is just me and a few others who remain within these walls.
Hattu recalled the grovelling Bel Madgalti's excuses that day at the gathering, watching from the balcony while his soldiers went to war for him.
Where are the rest?
Nuanza shouted up. After a pause, Darizu replied,
They went into the gorge 2 days ago. To block the Kaskan advance from the north.
Hattu looked north with every other. The empty, wide, silver-walled gorge stared back, the air swirling and the thin grass on the floor rippling in a hot breeze.
And they left you, their leader, behind?
Nuanza asked, shielding his eyes from the sun.
I stayed behind with a skeleton watch of 10 others. I thought it best to make sure the fort remained safe.
Did you now?
Nuanza laughed without humour.
He shot himself again,
Tanku whispered to Hattu and the rest of the wolves. Hattu had told them all about the gathering and Darazu's blubbering excuses.
10 others? And where are they?
Kurunta asked, his voice cracking in exasperation. Again, Darizu hesitated.
They have been stricken down with fever, I'm afraid. They ate some bad bird meat, the worst of omens. But I have consigned them to a barrack hut at the corner of the fort.
You are trained as an Asu?
Nuanza asked.
No, but I've seen how the healers work,
Darizu replied.
Now where is the Labana?
He said, craning his neck over the parapet to look back down the path the 200 had approached from.
I will slaughter 10 sheep in his honour.
Each more courageous than you, Hattu muttered.
You should bring him here. Bring him inside,
Darizu continued.
He will have his pick of the storehouse, and I can prepare him a comfortable bed in the command building. The sick men's malady will not trouble him. I can ferry water down for the rest of you.
Generous bastard,
Kurunta grunted quietly, then squinted up at the sun before replying.
The king is not with us. But I send water down.
Hattu saw Arrow still circling up there, agitated.
But the king is coming, isn't he?
Darazu persisted.
I do not think I should be opening the gates unless it is for him.
Damn you, man! Karunta snapped. Either open the gates or come down here and speak to us.
Wait a moment,
an elderly voice croaked. Old Ruba hobbled into view on Onyx's back. He mopped his sweat-lashed brow with a rag.
I know Darazu well. He is an awkward type, but I think I know how to deal with him. When he railed against my teachings, I used to tell him stories. He didn't realize that there were lessons in every tale. He would sit with me by the fire, eating bread and honey, learning obliviously, happily. Let me go up and speak with him.
Nuanza and Kurunta exchanged a look, then sighed and agreed. Hattu stepped forward to help the shaking Ruba from Onyx's croup. Be careful, old tutor. I do not trust this Darazu.
Nor do I, lad,
Ruba said, eyeing the woods behind them and the empty gorge on their left.
But I trust this silent land even less.
They watched Ruba whisper fond words to his pony, stroking its muzzle, before the scribe slowly climbed the hill. Bakka's narrow guard gate opened, and the old fellow hobbled inside. Nuanza and Kurunta gave the order to fall out. Then the pair crouched to their haunches and muttered in discussion about their next move. The men of the two companies sat, drawing off their helmets and setting down their shields and weapons. Some dug out bread and salty cheese from their leather bags, hungrily gulping down water from their skins to combat the lack of shelter from the sun. A few put up their bivouacs, such was their discomfort at the heat.
My loincloth smells like the Academy latrine pits on a midsummer's day,
Dagon remarked, as he sat cross-legged, hitching his crotch and sniffing the air to test his description. Garin halted, mid-mouthful of a chunk of cheese wrapped in bread, his nose wrinkling.
Dagon, I hope that one day a tiger pounces upon you when you're doing your business in the woods,
he said, before returning to chewing, albeit more slowly and reluctantly. Hattu chuckled. Other groups chatted likewise, but the light-hearted words were a veneer. He saw each man's eyes every so often shoot to the gorge. Could the few thousand Galasman warriors somewhere in there truly hold back Pitaga's Kaskans if they came in the numbers reported? Was that melting, rippling air in the gorge about to part and reveal a wall of bearded warriors, Galasman heads on their spears? He shuddered and looked uphill at Bakka Fort to seek distraction. The blue sky above was now spoiled by a murder of seven crows, who flapped down to rest upon the parapet, looking inside. A moment later, a pair of vultures began to circle overhead. Something reminded Hattu of that lame Galasman back at the farming village by the Green River Brooks.
It has been some time since the King of the Grey Throne visited these parts.
No winter scouts came here. The snows were too deep. Nobody knew the king was coming, he whispered into the ether.
Hattu,
Tanku said. How did that old fellow know the king was coming? Hattu said, a cruel shiver shaking him.
And why does Darazu also expect the king?
The pair shared a silent look, trying to piece it all together, finding only that they could not. Suddenly, a distant groan of timber echoed from within Bakka's walls. All heads turned to look up. The grunts of stressed timber grew as a great pillar swung up from within the fort, coming vertical and quivering to a halt. Across the top of the pillar was a shorter beam forming a crossbar, and upon it hung old Ruba, his arms outstretched, nailed to the crossbar through the wrists, his white robes torn into ribbons, streaked with crimson and fluttering in the gentle breeze. His skin was flayed and hanging in strips too. His head was lolling and trying to rise, and from the empty red pits where his eyes had been, runnels of blood poured like ghastly tears. His legs dangled, crooked and broken in many places. A weak animal moan sounded from this misshapen remnant of life, the stub of his cut-out tongue glinting red from within his mouth. Hattu's skin crawled, and he staggered forwards up the first few steps of the golden slope, then fell to his knees. Gasps rang out around him, Onyx brayed in fright. From the corner of his eye, He saw Kurunta rise from his haunches, the water skin he was holding falling, splashing on the ground. Nuanza rose with him.
Oh, goose,
Kurunta whispered, reaching out towards the hilltop with one trembling hand, as if he did not believe his lone eye.
Tarizu!
Nuanza cried uphill, his brow fiercely bent into a V.
Tarizu!
The birds on the fort walls scattered across the sky, and an eerie silence followed. Then, with a fierce animal cry, a wall of bearded, snarling warriors rose up from behind the battlements, hefting and shaking spears, swords, and axes. 20 Kaskan noblemen. Central was Pitaga, atop the fort's gatehouse, his black armor shining, the lion's skull helm glaring, his double-headed axe gleaming. Hattu staggered back, gawping. The heads of the others in the small Hittite reconnaissance party flicked this way and that.
Men, come together!
Kurunta bawled, Nuanza echoing the order. Panicked shouts rang out as the men scrambled to and fro, tossing down half-eaten food, kicking over the few bivouac tents, roaring at comrades, taking up the nearest weapons. It was a ramshackle line, 10 deep, 20 wide, facing the slope up to Backer Fortress. Hattu shared a glance with Garin, Tanku, and Dagon, each panting on the shielded front line. The hot air seemed to crackle. Then Kistner cried out,
"The gorge! Up on the gorge sides!"
Hattu swung his head to the north to see the telltale glints of copper and bronze up there on either side of the rocky passage. Kaskan soldiers, Pitaga's 10,000, he realized, hidden moments ago, now rising to peer south at this paltry group of Hittite soldiers. He caught sight of spears, arrows, rocks, an arsenal designed to crush an unsuspecting army on the gorge floor.
"We've stepped into a hunter's pit. They were waiting for the king, for the divisions entire to wander into that corridor," he realized.
"Send up the signal!"
Nuanza demanded of one of the ravens. An archer fumbled with his bow and dropped an arrow, already wrapped in a resin-soaked cloth. Nuanza growled and snatched the weapon from the man, knocking the arrow and striking a pair of flint pieces to light the soaked rag. His powerful body bent as he tilted the weapon skywards and loosed. The arrow sped up, up, and into the blue, slowing and hovering for a moment, ablaze, before streaking back down into the earth with a thud. Pitaga laughed long and loud from the walls of Backer.
"Empty your quiver, famed bowman," he roared. "None will see your flaming sticks."
"The hills are too high," Nuanza said, his voice tight and his eyes bulging, shooting across the golden southerly hills hugging the banks of the Green River. "The army will not see the signal. They will stumble onto this place unawares."
"Today was the wrong day to volunteer for reconnaissance,"
Pitaga cried.
"This,"
he gestured to the gorge and the waiting snare,
"is not for you. This is for your Labana. As was this!"
He stabbed a finger towards the cross from which poor old Ruba sagged.
"For I will have his skull, and his Tucantes too, when they come through. I will stride over the carpet of Hittite dead and pluck their heads from their necks to add to my collection."
He swung up a spear to hold it aloft in the sky. Hattu's eyes locked onto the spear tip. Affixed there was a gaunt, hairless, shriveled human head. Its features were unmistakable.
"Sarpa!"
he wailed.
"And now I must bid you farewell,"
Pitaga said.
"To the dark earth with you, so I can prepare my snare once more before your king comes this way."
Kurunta stepped back from the slope, head shooting to the meandering river valley through which they had come.
"Back! We've got to get back! We have to... Destroy them!"
Pitaga roared. As if a sudden breeze had struck up, the woods opposite Backer Fort, behind the startled knot of Hittites, rustled and shook. Hattu twisted his head to look behind him, towards the disturbance. A shiver ran up his legs, across his back and over his scalp, as he saw the shade within the pine woods writhe. With a shrill cry, a wall of men spat forth from the trees. Not Kaskans, but short-bearded, dark-skinned men in leather armour. The loyal watchmen of Galasma had appeared at last, over 1,000 hardened fighters, armed with swords, spears, bows, and brutish clubs. They ran at their erstwhile allies.
"Turn! Face!"
Kurunta shrieked. The instincts honed in training bested the panic in every man's breast as they swung to face the Galasman charge. Hattu and the frontliners sifted back through the ranks to present their shield front to the oncoming wall of warriors, 100 paces distant and coming fast. Then, from behind, the creak of casque and bows and whirring of slings sounded from up on Bacca's walls.
Square!
Nuanza howled. Another flurry of movement, and the line of 200 dissolved into a tight and tiny box of men, the ravens presenting shields to the missile troops on the fort walls, and the wolves showing their wall of shields to the racing Galasman army. Hattu's veins were suddenly drained of blood, and instead pumped full of some horrible, icy, viscous soup, as he saw the Galasman warriors now just 30 strides distant and bounding for him. Screaming maws, wicked eyes, and sharp metal honed to cut through necks and break bodies. He saw moments of his childhood, flashes of rare pleasant days and of momentous storms, tasted honey and brine, felt long past thrill and misery, as if they were here and now. The day of the Cascan raid staggered into his mind. There he was a fleeing boy, and flee he did. Here he was a soldier, trained to stand, to fight, and to die. And each of those things felt equally certain. He heard the rain of bronze arrowheads and slingstones battering down on the fort-facing shields behind him, heard the gurgling scream of one man stricken. Poor Onyx brayed in agony and crumpled to the ground as a Cascan arrow took the pony in the neck. 20 paces.
Shoulder to shoulder! Shield to shield!
Karunta bawled, then brought his twin curved swords out from his back sheaths with a zing.
The gods are with us!
Another barrage from the walls of Bacca saw the hot, stinking blood of a comrade shower the wolves' backs. 10 paces. 9, 8, 7. Hattu's muscles quaked with a glacial chill, and his belly and bladder demanded to release their contents. He sensed Dagon and Tanku, each pressed by his sides, shaking.
Tahunda, coat my heart, Garin tried to wrap his lips around the Storm Division's battle cry.
Tahunda, coat my heart in bronze,
Karunta finished for him.
Ishtar,
Hattu snarled through snatched breaths, thinking at the last of his guardian goddess, who had so far offered him nothing but a life of bleak riddles.
Hear me. Stand with us.
Tanku repeated this with a roar, as the Galasmans leapt across the last few paces.
Ishtar, stand with us!
Hattu discharged an animal cry, as a fiend with bulging red-veined eyes shrieked and loped towards him. Then came a blow like the kick of a horse, and a din like the wildest storm, as the flood of Galasmans crashed against the small Hittite party, with a clatter of shields and screeching bronze. He and the red-eyed one were nose to nose for a moment, panting, gasping, growling. But the Galasman, far bulkier, drove Hattu back a pace, then two. Blood puffed and sprayed across them as Hittite soldiers fell to Galasman blades, and Hattu was sure he was to be next, when Red Eyes freed an arm and swung his axe down for Hattu's head. Hattu ducked down and threw up his shield as the red-eyed one's axe struck. The blow was fiercer than anything he had experienced in mock combat, tearing through the shield. Red Eyes hacked at him again, and this time the act of deflecting the blow sent Hattu staggering back. Indeed, the entire Hittite line was rocked, forced to walk backwards up the Bacca slope. Hattu righted himself and surged back to the gap he had left between Tanku and Dagon. Red Eyes came at him again, his and Hattu's shoulders crashing together. Hattu dug his boots into the earth, but only when the mountain wolves behind him added their weight to his back was Red Eyes matched. Hattu lashed out, elbowing the Galasman in the jaw, sending the foe back a pace or two. It was enough for Hattu to bring his spear level again. The fellow's neck was exposed. But the enormity of this moment cast a spell upon him. A first kill. A man's body would be rent. A life would be ended. The Galasman's red eyes changed then into those of a frightened man. A son? A father? Hattu's heart crashed twice before he noticed Red Eyes bringing up a mace, the fearful family man, now a fiery killer again. Hattu at last thrust his spear forward, the tip plunging through the man's neck, splitting it like thin cloth. A deep red weal bulged from within, and then a torrent of blood spat with the man's every dying heartbeat. Hattu's heart thundered as he pulled his spear free, and the man fell away. But with a surge, the Galasmans drove the Hittites back, pace by pace, up the hill, Pitaga and his Cascan nobles whooping with delight as they loosed arrows and slingstones on their ever-closer targets.
"For the Storm God!"
Garin screamed to rally his comrades.
only for a Galasman axe to rip away his shield, tearing it to pieces. Then a fire-hardened club came down on his head, crumpling the leather helm and crushing his skull like an egg. His head fell away in pieces, and his body slackened and pitched backwards. Hattu gawped at the mangled corpse. A friend dead in a trice. Bone-shaking reality. Then the two Hittites either side of Garin's corpse were cut down in quick succession. Kisna and Sargis, in the rank behind, found themselves facing the gap where the three had been. The pair were agog, frozen. Hattu barged over beside them, lurching into the gap.
"With me! Close the gap or we're all dead!" he howled.
He leapt up, hurling his spear down and into the shoulder of one Galasman. The shaft punctured the bare strip of skin by the Galasman's collarbone and sank deep into his chest. A fountain of black blood jumped from the rim of the wound, and the man fell, shaking violently, mouth agape. He drew his curved sword from his belt and drove it up into a tall Galasman's gut, wrenching it to one side as Karunta had taught him. Hot, stinking guts flooded across his forearm, then pink-grey entrails squirmed clear like escaping worms as the Galasman folded over. He tore the blade free, then shoved the dying man away. But comrades fell either side of them, riven with spears, shoulders and heads cloven with axes or staved in with clubs. Hattu blocked a sword strike of one foe and stole a look across the battle line. The 200 had lost 60 at least. Thrum! Thwack! Another volley of missiles from the high fort landed in the flesh of the men at the hill fort facing side of the tiny square. Another two Hittite soldiers were cut down with gurgling cries.
"Set fire to the sky!"
Karunta rasped, twin swords working in a blur, cutting down Galasmans like wheat.
"Else our king and our comrades will die in that damn gorge!"
Another blazing arrow was loosed from within the beset Hittite square with a snap by one archer sitting on the shoulders of a spearman.
"Still not high enough!"
Nuanza cried.
"Gods, hear us!"
Hattu dug his spear into the ribs of an attacker, then glanced over his shoulder and up at the lofty Bakka fortress. A fire arrow loosed from there would be seen for miles, but the fort was nigh on impenetrable, its front wall lined with Pitaga and his nobles, its approaches a death trap. And in any case, the Galasman traitors had them pinned here at the foot of the golden slope in a maw of spears. Hattu heard the blood crash in his ears. Was this it? No hope of escape? No way of alerting the rest of the army as to what awaited them? When a Galasman speared towards him, he flinched, caught his foot in a rock and fell back into the crushed Hittite square. He landed hard, right beside a small patch of ground where the dust was puckering, sinking, falling away from underneath. He scrambled away from it just before the ground vanished with a whoosh. A puff of dust shot up like the breath of a spirit, clouding the skirmish. He blinked and coughed, then saw the hole that had been revealed, as wide as a man and leading to a warren-like passageway. An old mining tunnel leading under the hill, Hattu realized. And there was light within. A dim glow of daylight, coming from the far side of the hill to the eastern face. He leapt to his haunches, staring into the hole, trying to imagine the path of the shaft, if it indeed led to the sheer eastern face. He looked up at Bakka Fort again.
"Sir!"
he shouted over the battle din to Karunta.
"I can get up there, into Bakka. I can send up the fire arrow."
Karunta glowered at him for a heartbeat, his good eye like a hot coal, his face streaked with runnels of blood.
"Have you taken a blow to the head?"
But then his lone eye grew wide as he saw the burrow in the ground. Muwa stood on a smooth rock, mid-river, waving the ranks of the blaze on over the Green River ford at a gentle splashing march. The wagon train was still perched on the western banks, and they would take the longest to cross. Every so often he shot a glance up to the northern sky. Sun-streaked and clear, still. Coulter and Volker, by the royal wagon on the far side, were watching for the fire signal in any case. But Muwa felt an acute need to lend his eye to the matter also. For just a moment, he imagined that his brother had been assailed up ahead. For a trice, he even wanted it to be true. Then he was overcome with horror.
"What have you become?" he warred with himself.
He felt a panic grip his breast as he imagined his younger brother in danger. Then he saw the image of Atea and Hattu again by the temple gates. It was a lover's embrace. The guilt ebbed, and he felt detached from the troubling thoughts. He looked back to the lazy Green River, gazing into its depths.
"You knew how I felt about her," he seethed. "Yet you chose to betray me."
A cry split the air. Amuwa's head swung back to the north. There, a Hittite soldier was shielding his eyes and standing on his toes, peering into the sky. But the fellow slumped and waved a dismissive hand.
"Just a bird,"
he said contritely. They fell from the skirmish as if being snatched by some great underground creature. Hattu thudded down into the tunnel first, then Dagon, Korunta, and a pair from the Ravens, a reed-thin soldier and a small, muscly-limbed one. The din of battle suddenly became an odd distant sound. The roughly hewn tunnel was cold, mercifully so compared to the baking heat above, its walls veined with black and green, old timber props supporting the shaft every so often. The ceiling was low, forcing them to run at a crouch. Hattu kept his eyes on the dim orb of light ahead, praying to all the gods he was not mistaken. Then, daylight. They burst clear of the tunnel and onto a shelf of rock that ran like a belt around the foot of Backer Hill's sheer eastern face. Hattu tilted his head back, staring up at the impossibly distant rear wall of Backer Fortress high above. This was higher than anything he had ever attempted before, at least twice the height of any of the crags around Hattusa. Hattu felt the splash of moisture left in his mouth drain away. "Dispense with everything. Boots, helms, armor," he said, throwing off his battle gear as he spoke until he was barefoot, wearing just his linen kilt, carrying his bow and quiver and his curved sword. He eyed the climb. Blank. Where to start? Now his eagerness stalled.
"Prince Hattu," Korunta said urgently.
The muffled din of their comrades dying on the opposite slope came in waves. Hattu looked around the three with him, and Korunta. They were pale, still shaking with battle vigor, eyes wide and on him, demanding. He turned back to the rock face. "Every climb looks blank on the first read." Sapa's words came back to him like a welcome hand on his shoulder. "Read the rock once, then read it again, like one of old Ruba's tales. Always you will find new meaning, new possibilities." It was like the scrape of a whetstone on a blade, honing his thoughts. Now he saw the faint ribbons of shade and tiny dots of darkness here and there. "We start here," he said, stooping to gather dry dust from the ground in both hands, before patting his palms together. They now felt dry and smooth, the moisture of sweat absorbed. He moved to the cliff face. "Follow my every handhold and foothold," he offered over his shoulder, but saw the doubt on their faces. Over winter, Dagon had climbed with him, but on the smallest slopes near Hattusa and no more. The troubled looks on the faces of the two ravens suggested equally patchy experience. He turned to them. "It is always worst at the outset, when the rock face is looking down on you like your master. Climb and watch it shrink. Become the master of the rock." Dagon managed a half smile. The two ravens filled their lungs and nodded. Hattu and Korunta led the way, the powerful generals scaling the cliff face by Hattu's side. The lower surface was rich with handholds, Hattu found, and it soon became a rhythmic ascent, shifting his weight from one side to the other, gripping crimps with his fingertips and sliding his hand into cracks, making fists to anchor himself. But after a while he began to appreciate just how much higher this face was than any he had attempted before. He became annoyed at the sound of his ever-quickening breaths echoing from the close rock. The hot, still air grew a little breezy, and he felt the strength ebb from his battle-weakened limbs. Worse, the hot sun had caused the granite to sweat, the moisture within seeping out to form a fine film on the surface of the rock. A sloping hand grip, near vertical and reliant on the friction of his palm, felt like it was smeared in tallow thanks to this. "Climb with your feet. Balance with your hands," he retold himself one of Sarpa's old mantras, pushing up with his right leg to find another scant and clammy-feeling impression. A weak groan from one of the soldiers below drew his eye downwards. The drop was enormous. A lock of hair escaped his tight ponytail and whipped round to stick to his sweat and blood-spotted face. As he lifted a hand to sweep it away, a shard of rock in the other handhold shifted, and his entire body locked up in fear. He shot the free hand back to the rock just in time to stabilize himself.
"Take heart, Prince Hattu. We're nearly there,"
Korunta panted, flicking his eyes up. Hattu looked up to see the chunky stone and red clay wall of Backer Fortress looming just a short stretch above, flush with the cliff face.
But over the muffled din of the battle on the far side of the hill, he heard two low, gruff voices on the near parapet. Cascan sentries, he realized. Old Ruber had taught him parts of the mountain men's tongue. He whistled like a swallow to halt Karunta. The three men below them halted too. But then one slipped, losing his grip, dangling by one hand and barely catching a stifled yelp.
Did you hear that?
One of the voices said.
Have a look.
Hattu's heart galloped as a set of fingers wrapped around the parapet, knowing a staring head was about to follow. He imagined a thousand deaths, being poked from the cliff face by long poles, shot with sling stones, or having boiling water poured down on them. Instead, a falcon shriek was enough to spare them. Arrows swept down, and Hattu saw the hands up there flap and swat.
Damn bird! I'll wring its neck!
The Cascan snarled. Hattu's breath stayed captive in his lungs until he was sure the sentry would not return for another look. Then he whistled again and mouthed silently to the climbers.
Onwards!
When they scaled right up to the fort's foundations, the stonework offered easy handholds. The mud brick of the upper section, however, proved tricky, smooth and crumbling whenever he tried to work a handhold. But up they went, carefully, until he and Karunta clung just below the battlements like spiders. They waited a moment for Dagon and the two ravens to ascend to the same spot. The din of the clash on the far side of the slope was a little sharper now, screaming, grunting, and a smashing of bronze. He thought of Tanku, Kistna, Sargis, and the rest of the wolves, of poor Garin. Only a short time had passed since they had stolen away from the fray, but it felt like an eternity.
When we go over,
Karunta mouthed, signalling up and over with one hand,
we must dispatch the sentries up there silently.
They checked for agreement. Hattu noticed the raven soldier beside Dagon freeing a hand to repeat and affirm Karunta's up and over gesture. As he did so, the mud brick securing his other hand wrenched loose. It was a horrific sight. The soldier suddenly peeling back, arms flailing, legs kicking out as he plummeted. Hattu and Karunta could only watch, horrified, seeing the soldier's face agape and moon-white, knowing death was unavoidable. But the man was heroic, uttering not a sound as he fell. He was cruelly dashed from a jutting wart of rock, a blow that ruptured his head and sent him spinning crazily on towards the ground. But then, at the last moment when his lifeless body thumped into the hard dirt below, a loud animal grunt leapt from his bursting lungs. The grunt echoed around the Backer hillside.
Oh, gods, no,
Hattu mouthed.
That was no falcon,
the gruff Cascan voice on the battlements exclaimed. Footsteps padded over rapidly to the parapet again. A bearded warrior poked his head over, angered, then suddenly flooded with alarm when he saw the four Hittites clinging to the precipice like limpets. Quick as a striking snake, Karunta lurched up to chop his hand into the sentry's throat, winding him, then tugged at the man's collar, hauling him over the edge. The sentry flailed to the ground far below, a jagged star of blood exploding from under him. Hattu saw a second sentry, the one the first had been talking to, glance over the parapet, then back away. The man's mouth peeled open, ready to alert the rest of the Cascans in the fort, when arrows swooped down again, thrashing past the fellow's face. It gave Hattu time enough to lever himself up and over onto the walkway, then throw a right hook at the Cascan. It connected sweetly, sending the warrior into a spin and toppling to the parapet, dazed. In a flash, Dagon leapt over too, and, as the sentry tried to rise, whacked him hard on the nose, breaking bone and knocking him out cold. Instantly, Hattu ducked down behind a pair of barrels on the eastern battlement walkway, only now seeing the interior of the fort. The stronghold floor was all but empty. Pitaga and his knot of nobles lined the western wall, backs turned obliviously and still hurling all they could down the golden slope at the beset Hittite scouting party. All eyes were on that clash. Just the two now dispatched men had been spared to watch the seemingly impossible approach on this sheer side.
Bows,
Karunta mouthed, as the reed-thin raven leapt over to join them on the parapet. The general struck his flint pieces to light his lone fire arrow, then knelt, like the great effigy at the archery range, and loosed. The flaming missile tore high into the sky, silent and surely high enough to be seen from many danner away.
What now, sir?
Hattu breathed. Only now he realized the magnitude of that fire arrow. The Hittite column would spot it and halt at once, knowing it meant danger lay ahead.
The scouting party were alone, like thieves in this fort, and on the hillside, forsaken and beset.
"And now we die. With honour," Kurunta whispered,
knocking his bow again with a normal arrow and looking across at the Kaskan nobles on the far wall. Hattu realized it was the only option.
"Pitaka is mine," he hissed to the others, as they each unhitched the bows from their backs and lifted an arrow from their quivers, kneeling on the eastern parapet and aiming across to the western one.
"Make your shot count," Kurunta whispered, encouraging him and the others. "For once we have loosed, we will have to face with swords all of those we do not strike down."
Hattu exhaled the last of the air in his lungs. Normally this would see his body fall still for a perfect shot, but his forearms still trembled from the strain of the climb. He drew the string back to his ear, winked, training his right eye on the arrow tip and sighting it on the back of Pitaga's neck. This was it. With the slaying of the Lord of the Mountains, the 12 tribes would break apart, and the Kaskan threat would disintegrate. The war would be over. Like a breath of wind soughing through the trees, Kurunta said,
"Loose. For Sapa. For Ruba," Hattu mouthed,
as his fingers peeled away from the bowstring. Muwa's head craned back with nearly 15,000 others, his eyes following the tiny orange streak that shot past the sun, hovered, then fell towards the earth, somewhere beyond the hills of the river valley. A clamour broke out around him. All he could think about was his choice, and it would be an easy one to make. Hittite generals for generations had heeded such a warning signal in one way, and one way only, by halting the march of their column, by not striding on into the hazards ahead. And the scouts who braved those dangers to send the fire arrows skywards? To the dark earth with those brave souls. The bowstring whipped past Hattu's face. His arrow and the three others flew. They spat across the fort interior, the targets unawares, until the fire arrow whacked down into a wooden hay cart by the fort gates with a thud. Pitaga and his noblemen swung round at the noise. Three of the finely armoured mountain men could only gawp before the shafts aimed at them punched into their chests and bellies. But Pitaga shifted his weight onto one foot, Hattu's arrow grazing past his neck. The Kaskan lord gawked at the four figures on the eastern wall. The 17 unharmed guards with him did likewise. There was a stunned hiatus, ended only when the wooden hay wagon roared with a sudden eruption of flame.
"Defend your lord!"
Pitaga howled, shoving his men towards the parapet stairs, urging them onto the fort floor before him like a shield. Kurunta and Dagon drew and hurled their maces into the bunched group, staving in one's head and shattering the shoulder of another. The surviving raven soldier picked up the felled Kaskan sentry spear and launched it down, lancing one man through the belly, the tip shooting on through to skewer the thigh of the man behind. The cluster of noble guards broke apart, panicked, despite Pitaga's hectoring demands.
"Swords!"
Kurunta cried, drawing his twin blades and leaping down onto the fort floor. Hattu leapt down with Dagon and the raven soldier, swords drawn. The smoke now billowed across the fort floor as the wagon fires spread to the timber beams jutting from the armory walls. The 13 Kaskan guards fanned out to encircle them, now grinning and confident, seeing there were just these 4 Hittites to deal with. With a cry, they pounced. Hattu dashed the spear from one fat noble's grasp before throwing a leg out to trip another. Spinning, he brought his blade across the thighs of a third. A thrown spear cut through the air before him, nicking his shoulder as he dipped to avoid a fatal blow, before lunging forward to clash swords with the black-toothed thrower. Hattu's curved dirk slid along the Kaskan's straight-edged blade, all the way to the hilt, until the enemy blade bit deep into his knuckles. Hattu cried out, and then threw Blackteeth off with a kick, then ducked as an axe from another tried to take his head off. He sprung up to defend himself against these two, who circled him, certain they had picked an easy kill, each of them a head taller than Hattu. He flicked his dirk up and caught it to hold it blade down, watching each man's eyes and step. The axeman scythed down for him, and Hattu staggered back, almost losing his footing. And when he threw up his dirk to block the sword strike of Blackteeth, it was feeble, the curved blade sailing out of his hand. Weaponless, he backed away from the two. He saw a dropped Kaskan straight sword and made to squat and snatch it up, but the axeman's blade chopped into the ground, almost slicing his fingers off. He felt sun-warmed stone behind him and realized he had backed against the fort wall.
down!
Dagon cried. Hattu fell into a squat as Dagon's thrown mace met the axeman's temple with a boom like a bursting bag. The foe's skull crumpled with a spray of foul matter, and he wilted like a flower. Hattu pounced on the moment of shock to snatch up a burning faggot of hay, ramming it into Blackteeth's face. The fellow screamed, his beard hair and flesh melding with a stinking sizzle. Dagon rushed forward to plunge his sword into the man's flank with a crack of sinew and bone. Blackteeth fell to his knees, face ruined with fire, then collapsed completely, legs kicking in death spasms. Hattu and Dagon swung one way then the other in the scudding smoke and licking flames, back to back, certain another foe would be rushing for him. But there was none. Each of the Kaskan nobles lay dead or groaning, bodies riven. All but one. Pitaga's body was absent.
No,
he mouthed, then almost leapt from his skin when a small door at the edge of the fort clicked shut. His head snapped round, his smoke-grey eye focused on the door. Without a second thought, he snatched up a dropped sword and lunged for the door, kicking it open, sword levelled. Inside he found not a room, but a dark walled stairwell, hollowed out of the rock, winding down into the mount. Another part of the honeycomb-like lead mines, he realised. In the meagre light before the door swung closed behind him, he saw Pitaga further down the stairs, fleeing but pausing to look up, eyes wide. Then off he set again, descending out of sight. If the Kaskan leader escaped, then this would all have been for nothing. Hattu stumbled down the stairs after him, shoulders scraping from the jagged stairwell walls, tripping and rolling down one stretch of steps and skidding down others. It felt like an endless descent. Then suddenly he spilled into broad daylight again, stumbling through golden grass at the southern edge of Backer Hill. Hattu shot a look one way and then another around the deserted space, before a shape shot up from the grass and a flash of bronze came for his face. He leapt to one side and rolled across the ground, just as Pitaga's double-headed axe cut through the air where he had been. The Kaskan lord stalked over, ready to raise the axe again.
This time, cursed son, I don't think I will let you live.
Hattu leapt to his feet, levelled his sword and crouched like a warrior. And the last time I faced you I was a boy. Now I'm a warrior. You will pay dearly for what you did to my brother and my teacher. Pitaga's eyes came alight with menace as he laughed darkly, and both raised their weapons.
Lord!
A voice cried from the trees nearby. A Kaskan warrior in the shade there was pointing in panic to a cloud of dust coming along the Green River Valley. Hattu peered at it too, until he saw the screaming, snarling wall of men. Soldiers. Hittites. The Fury Division, alert to the danger, weapons drawn. At their head, Muwa. Suddenly the air was alive with skirling pipes, singing a bold song of war as the Hittite ranks came to conquer Backer Hill. Your ruse has failed, Hattu spat. Pitaga backed away, his confidence draining. As he went, he held up and shook a dark bag.
But your brother's head will stay with me, and your own will join it in good time, as will your father's and the two Kantis.
Then he pulled something from his cloak, a rag of sorts.
Your silver god is already mine.
Hattu frowned, confused, catching the thrown rag as Pitaga vanished into the trees. A strip of dark cloth. Then he held it up, saw it for what it really was, and his heart fell into his boots. Dagon staggered out from the stairway passage and saw his friend's face turn paler than snow.
Hattu? What's wrong?
The Battle of Backer Fortress ended as soon as the Galasmans saw the Fury Division surging from the Green River Valley. Most of the Galasmans melted away before the Fury could reach them, but those too slow were cut to pieces. The well-placed Kaskan forces, positioned along the high sides of the Carrion Gorge just to the north, vanished too, retreating deeper into the mountains now that their ambush had been exposed. Hattu staggered breathlessly round the foot of the hill, coming to the western slope, he and Dagon supporting each other as they went. From the corner of his eye, he saw the smoking mess that was the fort, the fires only now being tended to. He saw 100 or more Hittite warriors strewn on the lower slope of the Golden Hill, entangled with the brutish corpses of many more Galasmans. Shards of white bone jutted, sinews stretched and dangled. Red and black blood and foul grey innards coated this macabre undergrowth. The stink of death was powerful and unremitting.
Flies droned in thick black clouds over the mess. His face wrinkled like a hissing cat's, and he spat in the ground by one staring Galasman corpse.
The loyal watchman, he said with a bitter growl.
Then saw in the dead man's hand a small wooden pig, a child's toy. The dying fellow's last thought had been of his little ones. A great sadness swept across him. Then he looked at the rag of cloth Pitaga had given him, and nothing else mattered. Amongst the bloodied living, he saw Tanku with the rest of the mountain wolves. They were stained red with smoke, dust, and blood, and the 100 were now only 60 or so. Big Tanku seemed to be holding back tears as he held up a clenched fist and let loose a forlorn wolf howl. As Hattu and Dagon walked amongst them, many hands clasped their shoulders and shook them warmly. But still Hattu saw only the rag in his hand. Stumbling on through the masses of the fury ranks, he felt many eyes upon him. Something was different. Their hard looks had changed, softened. And then he heard the whispers from the ravens to the fury men.
He saved us. Saved us all. It was he who led the climb to send up the signal, to take the fort. Is this truly the cursed son?
But a raven corrected this one.
Did you not hear him before battle? Did you not see him fight? He called upon Ishtar, and she heard his call. He is no cursed son. He is the son of Ishtar.
The title was innocently voiced, but of all appellations, this was the darkest they could have chosen. Yet still there was only the rag in his hand.
Son of Ishtar!
Many others echoed, laughing, panting, oblivious to his thoughts. An hour or more passed, with Hattu sitting, head between his knees, the frantic events of the